Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Force Center podcast feed, which means I'm Ken Napsa.
And it also means I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. This is one of our News and Cues episodes. The Cues stands for questions, and the News stands for news, which just makes a lot of sense.
It's all in the title and the branding. News and Cues. We are going to get to some great questions. We're getting some news and a great little sneak peek at something coming in the High Republic and a lot more. But before we get to that, all we always want to remind you that today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. That's one offer we have. But Joseph, we have one more.
Yes, there is another. I can't believe it took us this long to make that joke when we have this transition right in our scripts. No, there is another. The other, or another, is Insight Editions. They publish a ton of great Star Wars books. They are offering 35% off across their website with a special Force Center code. To get your discount, you can enter that code, and it's FC35, or visit the website with this specific link, insideeditions.com/discount/FC35. This week, we are recommending the book that just recently came out on May 4th, Star Wars Galactic Baking. We've been advertising this one for a while. We're going to switch it up and advertise some of the other great Inside Editions books, but I was inspired to keep this one because it just came out, Ken, and we got a wonderful tweet on our Force Center Twitter account of somebody showing some of the cookies that they made because we have been promoting this, and they got it, and everything works. It's amazing. I just cling to things when they work. We advertise it. A fan bought it. They made cookies. This is what everybody involved wants to happen, and it all happened with the code FC35.
Yes, it did. I just found that tweet. Brendan Bozarth, who runs around Twitter as the Turtle Taker, which sounds like a great villain, said his mom and himself, his mom Angie, they baked the Bantha Blue Butter Sandwich cookies, and they sent a picture, and hot damn, they look great, Joseph.
They really do. They look absolutely beautiful. So if you want to make some Blue Bantha cookies, you can check out Star Wars Galactic Baking Inside Editions. The code, again, is FC35.
FC35, indeed. And from there, we're going to go to our little personal catch-up, which also means we catch up with all of you listening here. Star Wars adventures, life adventures, often they intertwine because Star Wars is life. Joseph, how was your week, Ben? We actually have been very busy recording Bad Batch stuff, so I always feel like you and I just spend days and days with each other, but really it's been a few days. So how are you, and what's been going on in Star Wars world for you?
Well, I sat down to decide which of my Star Wars adventures I want to share, and sometimes there it's just like, oh, I've been prepping for the podcast, and I kind of just could not believe that it has only been a week, less than a week, since the premiere of Bad Batch.
Right.
This is one of those weeks that feels like it has been a million years in a good way. Life adventure, I got my second shot of the vaccine. That was great. I'm very excited, very hopeful. Lots of great Star Wars feelings of looking to the future. May the 4th has a wonderful day. That's when we did our Bad Batch review. I have a tradition to get myself something for May the 4th. So I found a nice, affordable version of the Clone Wars cold weather Obi-Wan, where he's got the hood basically obscuring his entire face like he doesn't want to deal with reality. So I was extremely happy to get that relatable Obi-Wan action figure and add to my collection of the odd Obi-Wan Kenobi action figures and the cool ones. Biggest life adventure, not biggest in any way, but the one I wanted to share was that I have joined TikTok.
Yes.
We talked about this, I believe we talked about this on air, but I'm talking about it again at the end of our Bad Batch review of Cut and Run. But anyway. I believe years ago, Jennifer had started to plug that she was on TikTok too, and you and I were both big grumps about it. I guess one too many. I did Tumblr, I did Peach. Remember when Peach was a thing for 5 minutes and you could cake people? That was dumb, and now it's gone. I was a big grump about it. And then TikTok has been around, and I just decided I sometimes think about ideas and I want them to be perfect. I have both in me to be a real, like, let's study and let's do everything exactly, you know, dot all the I's, cross all the T's. And I have it in me to be a let's throw ourselves off the cliff, more improv oriented person.
Sure. Yeah.
And I wanted to try to embrace that side of myself. And I thought, like, I'm not going to allow myself to, like, write a little script and make a perfect little thing. I'm just going to grab my toys and do some videos about my action figures. And do it quickly and have fun with it. So I did that on TikTok, discovered that I really like TikTok, that the actual interface is, I find it really enjoyable and easy, and how easy it is to reshare your TikTok videos on other social media. And I did that. People liked the videos. It was great. And it felt like a nice moment of trying to practice, I think, what Star Wars preaches, what we often like about Star Wars on the podcast, Ken, of don't fear change, don't be stuck in the past, you know, learn from the past, honor the past, but try to move to the future. And as dumb as it sounds, just saying, like, I'm going to embrace a new technology. And I say new, knowing that it's several years old, and I'm just going to do something fast and fun and trust myself and have fun with it. Mm-hmm. Felt like a really good, this is why I value Star Wars. I'm never going to have a lightsaber and be, have the responsibility mm-hmm. of, you know, defending the galaxy from evil wizards. But those same lessons can be applied to dumb things like make a video on your phone. Mm-hmm. So that was my Star Wars and life adventure. That is a small external thing, but felt like a big internal thing to me.
It's big. I know you had a couple up, and then this weekend I watched specifically watched your Luke Skywalker Hot Wheels, because I have as I'm speaking to you, I'm staring at it in package, and loved what you said, and as always, I knew you're a skilled improver, and but you know your voice so well, I actually thought you did script it. Well, this is great. He's like directing it and everything, but no, it's great off the cuff because you just so know your voice and your perspective of the world and your way to communicate comedy. So it worked really well. I was really laughed when you came to the front end of the car as if Vader had cut his son's car apart. It's great. As an old school Hot Wheels collector from the 70s and 80s when I was a kid, I appreciate Hot Wheel humor too. So great stuff. Yeah, I tip my cap to you. I don't know. You know, this happens, right? I was on Friendster, MySpace. What the hell is that? MySpace. What the hell is Facebook? And I got an early, when it was still coming out of the college Facebook kind of thing, I got an early invite and was like, that sat dormant for 3 years. I was like, I don't know. It's just kind of nature. And you're right. It's like, we have to overcome that nature. I don't want to sit in a box and not change, you know? Important. Whether it's clothing styles, I'm not saying you go over the top and, you know, suddenly you and I are wearing things we 30 years past where we should. But like, you know what I mean? Like it says something about you to kind of go, all right, I must look around and see where I can continue to fit into this world.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's not always a commitment to do it forever, you know, so we'll see. We'll see if I keep doing it. But right now it's fun and that's what matters.
Yeah. And is it just your name? Just at Joseph Scrimshaw?
Just at Joseph Scrimshaw. Yep. Thankfully, no one has taken my name.
That's great, Brandy. Well, you and Jennifer can pave the way for Star Wars on TikTok for us here.
And I know you had some good adventures.
Yeah. I went to Mos Eisley to do comedy. I went to Canto Bite to do comedy. This past week, I returned to live comedy inside a club, pretty safely. You can, it's hard to tell. You never know. But a capacity crowd, it was cut 50%, but I was down at the Comedy Store in La Jolla, featuring for Mark Ellis, our buddy, friend of the show, Mark Ellis, and, had a great time down there. Had some ups and downs with comedy, but had a kind of a breakthrough in some stuff. And La Jolla is a beach crowd. It's generally affluent and, can be a little raucous and whatnot. And stand-up comedy, especially the club scene, can be that. The crowds are, you know, they want to, let's talk about some sex and get dirty, right? And other things. And that's, I'm not afraid to go there, but not always my style. So I struggled to find my voice, but was interesting. It was very interesting. Joseph is a great name. I had some great sets. And Saturday night was some of the best sets of my life. And I just, one of them was a little bit of a change in style, a breakthrough. And that's a little bit too, of just being able to continue to learn and not to get philosophical but pulling in Star Wars or just always, you know, analyzing where you are and what you're attached to and where your fears come from and how fear maybe doesn't lead to hate and anger and suffering on stand-up stages, but it sometimes does for me. and overcoming those kind of fears. I'm not going to say overcoming fear is the destiny of a comic, but maybe it is. I've been doing this comedy in some form or another for 20 plus years. And it's interesting to see what's changed. I used to do some Star Wars, quote, nerd-based comedy at the Groundlings, a sketch and everything, and wouldn't get them in shows. And no one gets it. No one wants that. It's fun. It's you, but no one wants it. No one's going to get it. No one's going to understand the reference.
It's fun. It's you, but nobody wants it. A hurtful thing to hear.
Yeah. And over the years, look, there's always going to be a little bit of a fun divide. I'll even occasionally poke fun of, you know, I'm a Star Wars nerd, and that's there. But it is, in general, I'm not saying it's perfect. This is general. The stigma's a little different now. It's viewed a little different. And even in San Diego, even at La Jolla, which is you have military personnel and you can maybe think you can generalize and stereotype that, oh, they don't like Star Wars and everything that. And maybe that's something I grew up with. Right. It's not the case anymore. And some of my other jokes maybe are struggling. Some of my own personal revelation type of humor or things where I'm trying to kind of get thoughts across and maybe lessons across. Some hit, some don't. But the Star Wars stuff, which used to get silence from a stand-up stage, now gets more applause and more people come up to me after. Oh, look at this. I got a Mandalorian tattoo. Oh my gosh, my dog's named Chewbacca. And both Mark and I have been experienced that. And Mark has a lot of stand-up humor, Star Wars humor in his stand-up. And it just was interesting to look back into how it's changed. You know, nothing's ever perfect in fandoms and all that kind of stuff. But just Star Wars influencing so many generations and it's everywhere. It's everywhere. It's your accountant. It's your lawyer. Even there was lawyers there laughing at this stuff. It is the big, strong, stereotypical guy you think would never want nerd stuff. He's got, look at this. I got an R2-D2 tattoo. And I just love that. I love experiencing that. I love seeing that change. And that was one thing I took away from my stand-up weekend in Canto Bight of the Sea, La Jolla.
Yes, yes. I think that is a great thing to reflect on, that even at the height of Star Wars popularity, there was still, back in the original trilogy run, there was still a little bit of like, yeah, it was a good movie and the kids love it with their action figures, but, you know, why do you remember the princess's planet is named Alderaan? Like, that is the environment that we grew up in. So it is amazing and beautiful to see it have fully transformed.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lesson back at me again, like, you know, you could look at a person and think, oh, there's no way they're going to love Star Wars. And that's on me. It's on me. It's truly universal. So a lot of fun. And thanks to anyone who's listening who was out in La Jolla. It was a great time. So with our Star Wars adventures on the table, we're going to get to some Star Wars news. One of the quieter weeks that comes and goes. We here at Force Center try to avoid digging into some of the set picks, leaked picks, and all that kind of stuff. It's not that we're, against those things. Occasionally I'll click. Occasionally I'll be like, I'm curious. And if it's just an outfit or something, maybe that won't, I don't feel, it's not spoilers for me, but just like, I just really am excited to go into these things. Not blind as possible, but just open to what's presented to me. That's one of our four center themes, right? So, but anyways, Joseph, yeah. You just dressed it. Yeah, there's a lot of those pictures that keep going around for Andor, Kenobi, and otherwise. And we're just, that's not our news.
And I have not looked at any of them. Yes, I do not want set picks for myself. I want to wait and see them in the show or when Lucasfilm's like, here you go. I appreciate everybody who does want to see them, but no unsolicited set picks for me.
Yeah. Look, let these creators create and then we'll see what's finished. But it's fun to speculate. It creates excitement and it does for me as well. But we do want to talk about something that is coming. That is something we're excited about. We've been talking about the High Republic. We love what's going on there. We love what they're building. And we've got the book Rising Storm. It's on the way from Kevin Scott, kind of a direct sequel to the Charles Soule Light of the Jedi, but everything in the High Republic builds upon itself as well as tells its own story. StarWars.com released a little excerpt of this book, Joseph, that focused on Elzar Mann, the Jedi we first met in Light of the Jedi, and visions. He's dealing with the visions he got in that book. He's looking for questions. He's also got some drama brewing, for lack of a better term, with his fellow Jedi, Avar Kriss, who is recently promoted, but also they have a strong connection that maybe tests the bounds and the rules of the Jedi Order. All that at play in this excellent little piece, Joseph. What are your thoughts on here as we look at what we read and what are the themes there?
Yeah, I absolutely love this excerpt. Not even remotely surprised because I love the Jedi stuff. I love Elzar Mann, the introduction to him in Light of the Jedi. I really like Kevin Scott's writing. Mm-hmm. And this was like everything that I was hoping for and more. One of the things that I just responded to right away is, you know, reading something from High Republic that feels really forward moving. In terms of the big picture story, I've enjoyed everything I've read High Republic, but Light of the Jedi, you know, if you kind of read them in that release order like we did, kicks everything off. And then you get to meet all these other characters as they're reacting to these big events. And here's this next adult book that feels like it's moving the big picture story forward. And that was mm-hmm. just great to read that of there's that great cliffhanger, spoilers, mm-hmm. of Elzar Mann having a vision that he's talking about in this excerpt. So it's great to get back to that and that sense of forward movement in the big story. So that was the first thing that I responded to. And then just kind of theme wise, I was really intrigued by, yeah, Elzar Mann is wrestling with this great bullet point list of things that we know Jedi wrestle with, but it still feels fresh, right? He's got this connection to Ivar Chris that they established that some Jedi Padawan think like, yeah, you can fool around a little bit when you're a Padawan, but then when you become a knight, and especially a master, this great image of Elzar having this terrible vision, then drinking a little bit too much, then trying to dance too close to Eivor. Just, it's so beautiful. It's so humanizing. So we've got like the attachment issue. Then we know that he's having horrific visions to the point of making him bleed, and he's trying to understand them, and it's dangling that great Jedi question that the films have wrestled with, books have wrestled with really well, of how do you respond to visions? Do you assume they're true and attempt to control them out of fear, or are they symbolic? Do you find a way to try to accept them, accept the amount that you can change them? Mm-hmm. You know, do you embrace them with reasonable concern for a warning, or with fear and control?
Yeah. 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 What I love about Elzar Mann is him. What jumped out in Light of the Jedi was just like he's kind of a little bit outside the box, but not in some of the areas we've kind of super familiar with. Qui-Gon was out of the box. Quinlan Voss outside the box. Dooku, you might consider at one point, was
outside way out of the box.
Way out of the box. Sifo Dyas and that kind of that circle of Jedi on the edge. Elzar Mann, excuse me, Exar Kun, right? We're going to Legends, right? Elzar Mann. I love that he is like about solutions and trying new things and trying to get there. And that seeking and his ability to find solutions is just running up against a wall, and a wall might be his growing fear or these visions. And the answer's not really emerging. There was that line of where were the answers he'd been promised? Where was the understanding? And how that's just a very human struggle. I think I experienced it this past weekend, and this makes the Jedi in this era just like you said it. Just even with the getting a little too drinky and too close to Eivor, just like man, just real. It just jumped off the page as real to me.
Yeah, and I love that he was set up as you're talking about in Light of the Jedi. Of he wanted to be a Jedi Master because the Masters aren't sent on assignments as much as Knights, and they have a bunch of elbow room to explore philosophy of the Force, and that he's really interested in how can you look for novel situations within the Force? Are there ways to use the Force or to understand the Force? And that it is such a great idea. Like, I just got what I wanted. I've become a master and now I can explore. And then the Force goes, no,
yeah,
you've got a thing to deal with. And that was one of the big themes that made me kind of wonder about where things are going. His vision.
Yeah.
Is clearly, you know, on some practical level, it's got to be a little bit about the Drengir and the Nile. It's practical, right?
Yeah.
But there's also this part of me of, I wonder if part of the story is going to be the Jedi are at such great power. The Starlight Beacon is this great idea of the light, right? It's mm-hmm. about reaching out. It's about connection. It's about hope. Is part of his vision just the dark side mm-hmm. rising to meet the light?
Yeah, right, which makes sense for this era. And I don't even think it needs to completely practically connect to the fall of the Jedi. There's some overtones in that, in these visions. But I like what you're saying. It's I go back to, I believe it was Pablo Hidalgo talking about the design of the Starlight Beacon. I'm just like, yeah, that it represents kind of many things to those, depending on maybe your status in the galaxy.
Yeah.
Beacon of hope or throwing it all in our face. And I think that started to emerge with even what's going on with the Starlight Beacon.
Yeah, yeah. I also really like just stylistically, Star Wars always pulls in lots of different influences. There is an influence to me with the Drengir of the of horror of the Lovecraftian. We talked about it a lot when we reviewed the book that introduced them. But this passage, even going so far as attempting to decipher the mysteries of the Gagarin Codex, the ancient grimoire whose text had confounded linguists for thousands of years, is somebody who has read most of H.P. Lovecraft. That's just some straight up Lovecraft stuff. That is absolute cosmic horror, Necronomicon, evil book stuff. That is just, I really love to see that pulp influence really brought to the surface in Star Wars.
That's, yeah, that's taking a deep dive into that. That's fantastic for Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. So I think if this is going to be at least partially, Elzar Mann is one of the main characters of this book about being plagued by actual threats that his vision is warning him about, but also just this huge wave of dark side fear trying to bring him down. That's a great, it's a great way and place to explore horror in Star Wars.
Oh, indeed, indeed. And then a little fun canon connections. He's going to Ashla, Moon of Tython. Tython, of course, we just recently saw Mandalorian. It's been around in other materials in as an important place, location of the Force in the Jedi and Star Wars. But Ashla, the connection to one of Lucas's original terms, right, for Force-related stuff, if memory serves. So just love having fun playing around with that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah. I mean, Ashla is not, not casual at this point. So I looked it up because I was like, I have 800 memories of what Ashla means, but currently in canon, Ashla is the name of the Togruta youngling that we see in Attack of the Clones. Ashla is the name that Ahsoka goes by, at times when she's hiding during the Imperial reign. The Lasat, people, refer to the Force as Ashla. The Bendu refers to the light side of the Force as Ashla. So there's just like a lot of Ashla going on, which makes me feel like, is that just a fun thing or are we going to get to see even more?
Yeah, maybe some bigger answers, bigger answers. Love this clip. Love love the writing. It just flowed. Kevin Scott's great. Charles Soule was wonderful. And everyone who's doing the writing for High Republic has just been hitting home runs as far as I'm concerned. And I think generally it's why they're so well received. So this is going to be an exciting one. Joseph, any final thoughts on the forthcoming The Rising Storm?
No, I'm really excited by it. I love that it sets up a story about Elzar Mann, the haunted marshal of Valo. Very excited for that.
Dancing a little too close. This comes out, The Rising Storm comes out June 29th. So we're getting ready for the next big section of the High Republic. And yep, you better believe we'll be taking a look at it a little bit closer and a little bit deeper here on Force Center. Other story that we're going to cover today, I wanted to go into the rumor mill a little bit, Joseph, if you don't mind. We'll dive on in. Like I said, we try to avoid some of that stuff, too. We just want to wait to actual information. But this one got me thinking. And a lot of times the rumor-based news will get me thinking, and that's fun. I mean, it's probably not fun to other people around my life when I start thinking, but it is. It's fun as a Star Wars fan. The speculation is part of what we do. And Game Reactor reported that EA and Respawn are still working on Star Wars games, specifically Fallen Order 2. Now, that's not a huge surprise. We've kind of been expecting this at some point. But, you know, with the recent the licensings and a lot of dissatisfaction with EA from certain fan groups and Star Wars included. This looks like it's a rumored sequel possibly set for 2023. Of course, no real details, but we know the cast of characters. We kind of know where we left off. I guess if anyone didn't finish that game, we'll get into some potential spoilers here. But I wanted to ask Joseph, what at this point do we want out of a possible sequel, considering things like timeline, more Jedi, something we did discuss in more detail on a Force Center episode a while ago of The Last of the Jedi includes many other Jedi at the time, and just the bigger canon connections as Fallen Order races towards other events like events of Rogue One or New Hope and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think in order to share my thoughts, I do have to share a spoiler for the video game. So if you don't want a spoiler for the video game, just fast forward a minute and you'll be great. But I really love that the end of the story of Jedi Fallen Order was this decision of we can't go get a bunch of children and train them and make the choice for them to be Jedi. They need to, you know, grow and learn and decide themselves. And instead, we will fight the Empire by just helping wherever the will of the Force tells us to.
Right.
That's a fascinating place for it to launch from, story-wise, for me. It probably won't be this, because I think they'll probably want a grander campaign. But I would honestly love it if the larger story was constructed out of they just sense that somebody on this planet needs help. Right. You know, if it was like just some sort of micro campaigns of what do Jedi in this era do when they're not feeling like we're not joining any nascent rebellion. Mm-hmm. We're just helping whoever we come across. There's a part of me that just kind of wants to play that. I think maybe it's because that's a part of Legend of Zelda games that I've loved in the past of you're always playing a part of the big adventure, but often it's just like you're walking down the road and, you know, some rock creature's like, please, my child's in the well, or, you know, I can't reach that food on that hot tile shelf. Will you help me? Like, and it's so gratifying to play a video game where like your motivation isn't, you know, you slaughter a lot of things because it's a video game, but your motivation is just like, could I help that person? Mm-hmm. And then you do. And then you get rewarded, and it's so great, and it feels good, and I would love that.
It's for me, it's Red Dead Redemption. You're on your main story. You're a grizzled outlaw trying to make good, and then a little white little indicator starts popping up on your map, and you're like, that has nothing to do with the main story I'm on. Do I go help that person? And now make a video game, a Star Wars video game of just going to help that person, and that's the main thing. I think I'm on board for what you're pitching, man.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to happen, because as I hear myself talking, I realize I am pitching, what if the side quests were the quest? And I think a lot of gamers are probably canceling any subscription they have to Force Center as they hear me say that. But I think philosophically that would be interesting. I think there's every possibility that they will run into nascent small rebel cells and get involved in how much are we willing to fight with the Empire and all that thing, or maybe if it is set a couple of years later, there is somebody Force sensitive who is calling out who wants to be trained, and they can follow up on that specific thread.
Yeah, and this all leads to them showing up in Mando season 3, and Cal Kestis is there. The idea, because the Saw Gerrera stuff is some of my favorite in that game. And obviously, I'm a fan of Saw Gerrera, and so him popping up in Fallen Order and just. You're seeing where Saw's at in his life and what the choices he makes and how people around him think about those choices, both good and bad. I enjoy that. So I could see working with parts of the rebellion storyline from that aspect of these characters, maybe meeting them, but also the big themes, redemption and trauma recovery and all those kind of things that were at play in Fallen Order. They're going to find obviously some good theme. I trust them. And that's going to drive it forward. So we don't get hung up on plot details all the time here at Force Center. But yeah, I can't help but think about that kind of stuff. That's the kind of stuff I was thinking about. It's like, how close do I at this point really want it to get? And I'll say this, like, I'll trust them as far as I want to go. But it's like, you know, if they, Joseph, I almost don't want more corners for these characters to be around. I do want them on another planet. I do want them somewhere else. And I do want them experiencing their own stories. And I don't feel at this point I'm going to be too worried if Mon Mothma doesn't show up.
Yeah, no, that is the wrestling with, like, how much do you want the stories to connect? It's always gratifying and fun if they do. Like, I'd be happy if they interacted with Saw again. Like, yeah. I'm sure if they interacted with Ahsoka, Rex, or, you know, wherever the Bad Batch is at that point, like, yeah, of course that would be thrilling.
Yeah.
But the encounters that would be cool to me, because they'd be different, because we haven't explored as much as, you know, maybe a young Lor San Tekka. If they're interested in Force things, or meeting young Sheridan Baze, know, on Jedha would be interesting places to go, because it could also be a story of we're going to preserve, you know, what exists of the Jedi. You know, it could that would be a fun quest of like just going through the galaxy, squirreling things away.
Yeah. Or they end up being whisked away to somewhere magical by the Purgle. And, now we have a big old just a potluck of characters off the map.
Do you want to talk about death?
I do. I do. Do death.
Because I know that's what we both think of. We talk about all these other things and we care about them and they're interesting. But I know you and I both have in our hearts death when we think of Jedi Fallen Order.
Yeah, I'm okay with some I'm okay with some death. I'll just say that. I do like the characters of Fallen Order. The game itself, I've talked about some of the gameplay and the consistent, almost needless slaughter of the animals, the beasts. You and I, we talked about last week. But yeah, Cal's a good character. The story was there. Yeah, I'd be satisfied with a good death, because if there's a couple video games I played, I don't want to spoil my name, but it's like a character dies and it's powerful and it's poignant, and I think they could do that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's where I'm coming from. It has nothing to do with not loving both Cal Kestis and Sarah Junda. I do think that I don't want, you know, too many Jedi running around around different times. And I know people love Cal and, you know, really wanted him to even show up in The Mandalorian. And if that's what the storytelling makes sense to do that, that's great. I love the character. But I think there's something fascinating to me about this is an opportunity to tell a really deep story in a video game setting, because a lot of wonderful Star Wars stories that we tell there's so much great going on, but the characters can't die because they're going to pop up later. Right.
Right. Right. Right.
And right now we're in this place where they're a Jedi in a time where Jedi are hunted, that there's the opportunity to tell some really interesting stories about them not making it as far as the Galactic Civil War.
Yeah.
And in particular, there's been so much great storytelling lately with Ahsoka and season 7 of Clone Wars and a little bit of what the characters were talking about in the first video game of, not every battle needs to be a grand battle. Mm-hmm. We are meant to help people. And that would be a really fun and interesting thing to me to have the emotion of playing through a noble Jedi sacrificing themselves, not for a huge galactic cause, but just for a small thing to save five people in a village, because that's who the Jedi are. That would be really powerful. And I think there's an opportunity with these characters.
Yeah, that's very true. Like that, it's all this. It's all kind of one, and one saved life is not less valuable than a million saved lives, I guess, you know, from the Force's perspective, maybe just getting into that kind of stuff. I could get that.
Yeah, from the Jedi philosophy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I think if I honestly had to guess, I think that there's a desire to make this a trilogy because that's Star Wars tradition. Mm-hmm. I think poor Sarah Junda will not make it through the second game, and I think poor Cal will not make it through the third game.
There you go. Hard, fast predictions right here. And I'll predict that there will be some kind of giant creature that will torment you no matter how many times you just press X. You're just not going to win right away.
That's right. We're going to be attacked by big, angry bats again.
Again and again and again. We'll update you if we hear more on this. And of course, if anything becomes official, that's kind of it for the big news that we're going to cover right now. A lot of cool things out there, little things. And again, those set pictures and a lot of other things are out there. So search for Star Wars news with caution if you're like us and just kind of want to get the official stuff. So that's a look at Star Wars news. Before we take a quick break, as we always do, we're going to recommend an audiobook we think you should try out on us. Joseph, what do we have?
This week we have Ahsoka by E.K. Johnston. This one was on my mind because we're all enjoying this moment in the Bad Batch, and it's really fun to look back at that Ahsoka novel that is kind of going on at the same time and seeing what Ahsoka's journey is like compared to the Bad Batch.
Check it out by downloading your free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/forcecenter. Again, that's audibletrial.com/forcecenter for your free audio book. All right, let's take a break. On the other side, your questions here on Force Center.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, Four Center friends, make sure you're keeping up to date on all the great content from Jennifer Landa. Whether it's YouTube, Instagram, or TikTok, you whippersnappers, Four Center's own Jennifer Landa continues to bring you fun, informative, and insightful laughs and moments.
Also, Jennifer brings her experience and perspective as a Star Wars-loving mother to her DIY projects, blogs, and more. So be sure to head on over to JennyLanda.com, that's JennyLanda.com, for articles like how to make your own Darth Maul sneakers or 10 unique Star Wars baby gift ideas.
Follow Jen on Twitter and Instagram at Jennifer Landa and on TikTok as JenniferLanda1138. Welcome back to Force Center, the big show, the main show, the superstar destroyer of our fleet, the katana of our line of luxury barges. We are here to look at your questions. Joseph, what do we have?
Got two questions from Twitter and two questions from our patrons on Patreon. As always, we're going to dive into Twitter first. Jay from Nowhere says, I can't remember a time when I didn't know who Yoda was. Do you recall your initial viewing of Empire? Did you clock the little green annoyance as the sought-after Jedi Master before Luke did? This is a really fun question, Ken. I know you saw Return of the Jedi first, so I'm so curious how you process your introduction to Yoda.
Yeah, a weird experience. And I always say I saw them all, so a Jedi definitely first and a very clear memory of it, but I saw them all so around the same time that my brain sometimes over the years just kind of mushes them all into one viewing as if I sat down and watched them all in order, you know, and I didn't. And Yoda stood out because I think I've told the story before, but like when Yoda died in Return of the Jedi, my sister, about four at the time, had to be taken out from the theater, and she just kept cry screaming, Yodio, Yodio, my Yodio. So I didn't like when Yodio died, but going back and meeting him, the Yodio's tricks didn't work on me. I knew it was him. And so the only thing I'll say about that is it made me think about that scene maybe a little harder than I would have grown up, you know, what I've just back when I was accepting Star Wars on face value. Of just pew, pew, pew and the fun stuff. And then you start digging deeper as you get older and everything. And yeah, so it was like that. What did that mean? What was that for? And then you get the fun questions of, you know, later on after prequels, was R2 in on it, or was R2 kind of like, dude, what are you doing? Like me. and it might've been, correct me if I'm wrong, Joseph, but it might've been like Heir to the Empire. That might've been the first time that I kind of really took in the fact that Yoda was the training had already begun for Luke and who you think you're seeking and everything. I kind of remember some of that stuff in Air of the Empire. The details escape my mind. So yeah. So Jay, great question, but yeah, that, it was a backwards viewing, much like Yoda's speak. So I was able to get a different meaning out of it there, but it was also fun. And then because you're so, then you go back and watch Return of the Jedi on VHS or a TV copy, a TV view, and you're like, you're extra sad that Yoda passed away.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, heavy stuff. I do not remember. It's been so long since I read Heir to the Empire. I don't remember any sort of reflections on it from that book myself. And for me, I did see Empire first, but I was so young. It is so dreamlike. And I do remember specific things from then. But a lot of them are sort of like detail levels at like my literal child level. You know, there are memories on the carpet or, you know, putting Bespin Luke in the tall window and pretending he was up high on Bespin. And I remember my brother really, I must have been confused because I remember my brother being like, that's not the Death Star. They're not on the Death Star when Luke and Vader fight. That's Cloud City. So I must have, I don't remember confusing it, but I must have. What I have vivid memories of finding my Yoda action figure, playing with my Yoda action figure, the one that is sitting right on this computer. I'm looking at it as we record. What I remember most about that moment is I loved Yoda, and it was a lot because of that opening scene where he was the little green annoyance. And, you know, I would not have been able in any way, shape or form to verbalize this at the time. But looking back, I think what was going on was I loved seeing someone who was weird and playful and like the big, tall, important people didn't think was important, but was actually like really wise. And I think it really connected to me deeply as a weird little kid that my feelings matter. My perspective matters. Maybe I know something you don't know. There's that thing when you're a kid, when you try to express yourself, but adults kind of can sometimes not understand what you're saying or be just kind of judgmental or dismissive. Right. And I think I glommed onto Yoda from Empire because he made me laugh because he was weird and playful. But then he was also really wise, and knowing that Luke, who I also loved, initially didn't respect that, I think just on a deep level made me feel like, yeah, don't judge me. I might be like Yoda. You don't know.
You don't know. Don't judge me. You don't know me. You don't know me.
Yeah. Maybe I'll hit you with my cane when I meet you, but I might have some really important things to say.
One thing, yeah, you know, I'll say this too. This is great, and I know what you mean when you're like dreamlike, just like you know when you see a movie earlier. You're so young, and you just I think I remember seeing Annie sing It's a hard knock life. My first movie in a theater. With this one, Jay, though, I'll tell you what, when I did finally see Empire, you know, with months really after seeing Return of the Jedi, I was young enough, and I'm a skittish kid and probably skittish adult still. Yoda scared me too when the you know, I'm not afraid. You will be. That chilled me. I could still kind of go back to that spot in my heart and my mind when I see Yoda do that. It's a great moment. But as a kid, it was like, what's he talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, the "you will be" was always scary. I think another thing that makes it dreamlike for me is, you know, I was able to see the movie on my birthday in August, and then we went back and saw it again on my brother's birthday in November. But in between, I collected those trading cards, and I had the storybook. And I think there was a lot of processing the story that happened away from the movie. Mm. And that's sometimes why it feels kind of dreamlike, is like, did I think that when I saw the movie, or did I think that while I was trying to find a trading card, you know?
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, yeah, this is a great card. You know, I know we've mentioned this before, but me and my friend Joel, who still lives down here, we moved to LA together 20 years ago. We're both convinced X-Wings and Y-Wings hit that shield in the second Death Star. In the instant trap moment, we're like, no, I swear X-Wings just exploded. And I brought that up before, but it's like, it took years for me to go, I guess I didn't see that.
Yeah, it's a big thing. I will not do a long diversion, but my wife and I watched all of Deep Space Nine, which I had seen the first several seasons of and then didn't see the last two seasons. And it was always my favorite Star Trek, even not seeing the whole thing. It's like, I'm going to rewatch it. So my wife and I watched all of it. And I was like, I can't wait to get to this episode where this actor, Richard Beamer, who I love from Twin Peaks, is in it. And there's this great scene where he is he's drinking water from a river, and everybody thinks he's a hero, but it turns out he just got a lucky shot at somebody who surprised him.
Right.
And I'm like, I can't wait to see that scene. So we're watching the episode, and that scene does not happen. The character simply relates the scene. And I created the image in my mind. And this was not when I was, you know, incredibly young years old. This, yeah. I saw that, you know, when I was capable of forming memories. But that was just a great reminder to me of our memories are dreamlike.
Yeah.
That I remembered a scene that is in the show, but it's described by the character. But I remembered it as though I physically saw it.
So here's how the big connection, Joseph. Jay from Nowhere, you inspired a great conversation. As all of our questions from our listeners do. But Joseph, what you're describing is Leia going, oh, yeah, I remember. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, I saw Richard Beamer through the Force, just like Leia saw Padme. No, that's a really great point. It's a really, really great point. Great question, Jay. One of the great twists in all of Star Wars, that little green annoyance is the Jedi Master. We're going to move on to our question from Alejo. Alejo says, in honor of the Skywalker biography that will be released soon, this question is a little bit older, the biography has been released and we'll be discussing it this week. Anyway, Alejo says, in honor of the Skywalker biography, what other Star Wars character deserves an in-depth biography? Who do you got, Ken? Who else do you want to see their entire life broken down in one volume?
Yeah, so this is interesting because I got the notes yesterday, but I was traveling. I got home late from doing comedy, and so I pulled these up this morning over coffee, and I read this question. I went, oh, simple, Dooku. And I was like, well, wait a minute. We used to answer that, and then we got that to a certain degree.
Part of it, yeah, not the whole thing, a chapter.
Yeah, it's there in a way. But so in terms of this style, and yeah, we're looking forward to dive into this book. I would love to see the rebellion.
Mm.
I mean, if it's one character to Alejo's question, I will say Mon Mothma, the mother of the rebellion. That's your book. Mm. But also tracing the story and the formation and the themes and everything and just in the big moments of the rebellion, the rise of the rebellion, quite literally, Bail Organa, the early meetings, Padme, where it comes out of that, all the way up to the Rogue One stuff, to Mothma's great speech in Rebels, and just putting it all together. We see the story, and people are probably, we see the story. Yeah, but that's also we see the Skywalker saga. And then Kristen Bavor has this book of just kind of putting it all together in one place and diving in. I could see that. That might work for me. But then if I have to answer one, I think Mon Mothma is a very important character that gets her due at times, but other times is, just walking in the background in the Clone Wars.
A lot of walking in the background in Clone Wars, yeah. No, I think that's a great choice and such a great example of, I think, the power of books like this is Mon Mothma's speech in Rebels where she, leaves the Senate and kind of declares a version of the beginning of the true rebellion, right? We can look at that as fans of like, oh, yeah, no, I remember that. That's really cool. It's really important. It's an episode of Rebels. When you write a biography, that's one of the big moments. That's like one of the defining moments of Mothma's life. You know, when you write these biographies, you can kind of take away some, I think, of the real world sort of how we stack things of like, that's a cool moment, but it's in Rebels, it's not in Return of the Jedi, and it strips away all that. And it's just about the event. And like, that's one of the events of Mon Mothma's life. Right.
It absolutely is. And look, I love a good biography of a political leader, a historical figure, a real, life or historical figure, like warts and all. I love reading a lot about the Old West, all the truth and all the realities and all the fictions in it and there. So Mothma, fits into that for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I went down a similar path as you. I'm still really interested in Dooku because his life touches so many events, everything from being Yoda's Padawan to his fall to the dark side to being a part of the separatist cause. And Dooku, the Jedi Lost audiobook and script that you can get now, script book. Great. Yeah. Great, and does tell a big chunk of that. So maybe not as much of an imperative as it used to be. That used to be our go-to answer for all of these things, as you say, Ken.
Yeah.
The other person that I go to is Obi-Wan. I do think that there's a lot of value. I don't think there's going to be anything like this for a while until the dust settles of the Kenobi television show. But I think there's a lot of value in stringing together his entire life experience. I also just tend to answer Obi-Wan for almost everything of who would you like to have a drink with? What's your favorite color? Obi-Wan. I want to be cautious of being too Obi-Wan obsessed because I do love the character. So what I came to, Ken, is the dark mirror of your answer. Mm. I want the prison house tell-all of Mos Amita.
I don't want to get too real world, but it's like John Bolton's got a book. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now you do. Okay. Sold. This is a genius idea. This is great.
I think it would be really fascinating. It sounds like a joke, but like Mos Amita is one of those characters who just like pops up again and again in canon. He's the one who signs the official surrender document, right? The treaty that the Empire is over, right? And I can't remember what other details are in that book, but I imagine that the Republic is like, and welcome to a very, very comfortable and humane prison, but you're going to prison. He has been at Palpatine's side. And even before, he has, in my imagination, ushered in the initial just junk that made the democracy of the Republic not work, right?
Right.
He's the one, Valorum's going to do the right thing and send and help Naboo. Mm-hmm. And Mos Amita is the one who turns and whispers in his ear, right?
Yeah.
About, you can't do that. So even before he was Palpatine's right-hand Chagrian, he was whispering in people's ears. And it would be a really fun thing because I love the Skywalker biography. It's great. But I would also like things that are written explicitly from a point of view.
Yeah.
And if this was Mos Amita's after he'd signed the surrender document and was like, look, I did some not great things. Now all can be told. I did kind of know he was a dark wizard. Okay. I did know that a little bit, but here's the thing. And just tell try to justify the political horrors and the horrors of war that he took part in throughout the fall of the Republic and the Empire.
Yeah. What's so funny? This ties to some of the jokes that are sometimes funny, and especially back in the day, 2015 range, where, you know, Star Wars stories, standalone movies, and people would make the gonk droid jokes, and you help. I remember you contributed to some to Screen Junkies, right? Yeah, back in the day.
I did, including a gonk droid joke.
Yeah, gonk droid. And I think but my point is, we're all there for those kind of jokes. We get it. But then it started to turn into an eye roll, right? Oh, what are they going to do? You know, one about the Rancor. I still go back to the beginning. Yes. Give me Patissa's story. Give me the gunk drug story. Because I'm a Star Wars fan. We spend time doing this by ourselves. We spend time on podcasts doing it. I would love Lucasfilm to do more of this stuff. One-off hour, give me an hour, kind of not parody but satire at times, but very real to the Star Wars story of Mos Amita, and Mos Amita explains all. is not just funny, it could be really insightful to this big story that we spend so much time investing in. I love your idea. Well, let's call some people. I'm calling people right now.
Excellent. We'll call people. I'm just going to open the window, and I'm going to start yelling, Mos Amita biography.
Turns out I don't. Anyone,
autobiography.
Anyone I used to know at Lucasfilm to stop talking to me after Jedi Council. All right.
great question, Alejo. And I think if the Skywalker biography is successful, which I'm sure it will be incredibly successful, I hope to get some more fun and flavorful things like this.
Yes.
Moving on to our questions from our patrons on Patreon. First question is from John Z, and it's a really nice and a really fun question, but it's a little bit of a housekeeping question for the podcast itself, and I thought that would be fun to include. Ken John Z says, what happened to Star Wars Counseling? I love that show. Joseph does such a great job. Thank you very much. Very kind, John. It looks like the last episode was in January 2020. I imagine that the reason why it has been on hiatus is due to a lack of time, but I love to see it revived. Look forward to the day when we'll all be saying somehow the counseling has returned. It's very nice. For people who are perhaps newer to Force Center, I used to do a show called Star Wars Counseling, where I would collect grievances, things that people either were bothered by in Star Wars or questioned or wanted to try to look at from a different way, and try to look at them from lots of different points of view, and try to go toward the light and make people feel better about the parts of Star Wars that bothered them. Sometimes I would do it as a convention panel. Every once in a while, I'd kind of do it as a group episode. But most of the time, John is saying, I took just a tremendous amount of time on them. I did a lot of research. Sometimes I would even out script out, you know, 20 pages. I basically was writing college thesis papers on, you know, why isn't there more glass on Tatooine? Which was like one of the really fun, weird ones. It's made of sand. Why isn't everything made of glass? There's a ton of sand. Where's the glass? So they get fun ones like that, and then really deep, heartfelt ones you know, about Padme's role and things like that. And I really took it seriously, and I really wanted to do my due diligence. And it took a lot of time. And I had got to the point where it's like, I can't take as much time as it was taking, but I would really love to find a way to get back to it at some point. So Ken, I wanted to open this up to you about our slate does change a lot.
Yeah.
From my perspective, I think it's really that you and I both want to do as much Star Wars talking as humanly possible. Yeah. And the question is how to balance that with all of the other things in our life, and to make sure that the Star Wars talking we do is good quality Star Wars talking. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, it's really fun. We're 6 years into this, and what this has remained all the things have changed in my career, and that's good and bad things. Same with you, Joseph, of opportunities, missed opportunities, things that pop up. Just trying to survive in this town here, just survive in the big city, some crazy kids chasing their dreams. Force Center has remained and is something that I even look towards, I look forward to more each week. It's my favorite time to sit down, and that's not against anything else I do, but it's just like, I feel we've continue to take the show in ways that just make me really proud, and that's sometimes hard for a comic to be proud in anything. But yeah, it changes, and sometimes, you know, Spotlight Star Wars has always been designed to be an off the cuff monologue from me to you, a Star Wars fan, and there's sometimes I just felt like, man, I just dropped just a load of crap of a podcast on the fans, and I need to take more time with it or have more energy for it. And so we don't want, and you know, maybe it's probably never as bad as we think. And so, you know, I know the effort you put into Star Wars counseling. So sometimes we feel we need to adjust, and we can get locked into, you know, well, you and I released a Star Wars ranked on a Thursday last week because we're doing Two Bad Batch. And I remember there was a moment where I was like, well, we can't do that. Star Wars ranked is Sunday. And I was like, well, to who? To who? The Four Center supporters and faithful over the years and new ones alike are very supportive. And we also know you all can't, we do four episodes a week in general, and you all can't listen. And habits change. That was the other thing too, Joseph, is habits change during the height of the lockdown, where people weren't driving to work as much. And they still might not be. We'll see how that goes. And so podcast numbers across the board went down or changed. So Four Center wants to stay with that. You know, and say I put out a show called The Data Pit, one episode. It was going to be a lot more scripted, shorter, it was designed to be short, more behind the scenes. And I was really proud of it. It was a different style. It's a music plan underneath everything. And I realized pretty fast, much like US Stores Counseling, this took more preparation than I could give at the time. So that idea, that concept's not done. I just couldn't give the best product. So that's part of it too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think a couple of things that you're making me think about, Ken, is one, I just really appreciate our audience has always been really, really understanding about change mm-hmm. and flexibility. Like, we've always had some version of this show, the news and cues. Right. We split off the kind of deep dive so we could dive even deeper into a separate show. But news and cues, this kind of thing is always going to be the staple, right? Mm-hmm. And then we've shifted and changed and done lots of different things for lots of different reasons. And sometimes we're like, hey, here's a new show. Mm-hmm. Then we're not going to do that all the time.
Yeah.
Or here's a show that we're taking a break from, like Data Bank Brawl, because it's really hard to do the improv, mm-hmm. Literally talking over one another online. So he's like, well, until we can record again in person, and put that one pause. So I just really wanted to thank our listeners for just always being there with us with the mm-hmm. flexibility. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that really occurs to me is in all of our great exploration of Star Wars, Ken, I've come to really, really appreciate that one of the dualities of Star Wars that I love is what I'll call the absurd and the profound, mm-hmm. you know, that Star Wars can be everything from, oh, I love Lulilo Primot because he's an upside down frog who's a lounge singer in a vat. It's so great. It's so weird. It's so fun. All the way to like the most profound, like mm-hmm. when you're talking about Rey and what she means to people and what her choices mean to people and what her identity means to people, mm-hmm. that's extremely serious, extremely real stuff to people. And I think our shows, I think in general, you and I have been, and certainly Jennifer, have said, if we're talking about the absurd, if we're talking about our favorite action figures, let's have fun and bat it out. Mm-hmm. But if we're talking about the profound, let's really take a moment and take a beat and take people's feelings into considerations. And I think that's the real difference to me of sometimes we can just bounce out the absurd, but I always want to take time when I'm talking about the profound.
Yes, yes. And it's not just a matter of detailed, copious notes, but it's organizing thoughts and really taking care and at times caution with what we say and how we say it and fostering that atmosphere. And I definitely just love doing that for our fans, with our fans, not for fans, but with our fans there too. And I think you're right. The absurd and the profound is definitely Star Wars. It's definitely Star Wars. It's a tattoo. It's a toy. It's your way of life. It is a silly thing you get to laugh at and with and share with people. And the final thing, Joseph, I guess we never forget. And we don't want you to forget Jennifer Landa, who is, you know, very much a part of this family, and very much her presence is both missed and felt here, and mm-hmm. doing some great stuff. And follow her on TikTok. We run those ads in the middle of the show for reasons. We want you to still know of Jennifer. Maybe if you're new, there might be people who started listening last year, like, I've heard of this Jennifer Landa. So Jennifer's great. And now a mother of two, which was part of the original reason she needed to take some time off. And also there was, you know, we get to where she had moved a little farther away from our recording location because LA works that way. Like, oh, a map. That's 10 minutes. That's took me 4.5 hours to get to San Diego on Friday. So it's just kind of a reality of the situation, but she's still part of the family and part of the team. And we encourage you to include her in tweets or those kind of things if it's appropriate in celebrating Four Center with us. And as always, not only it's not just that it's on the table for her to come back. It might never be to the degree that she was on regularly with us doing now four shows a week, just the realities of it. But we absolutely still are in communication with her all the time. And we know that question comes up too.
Yeah, yeah. Well said, Ken.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go, John Z. There you go. Good housekeeping. We're 6 years in, 7 seasons of podcasting, which is always weird that Apple makes you do that sometimes and it messes all around, but it's all there. We're still going strong. And thankfully, I mean, that Kenobi series, we're going to do 12 shows a week now.
yeah, it's going to be a lot. we'll move on to our final question from Simon Huffnagel, which brings us, I would think, into the beautifully absurd side of Star Wars. Simon says, we've all quickly fallen in love with Geode, and rightfully so. One day, a funny thought occurred to me. Since we don't know his age or how long-lived his species can be, it's entirely possible that Geode lived well beyond the High Republic era. He could have been present for any number of major events, and we just didn't know to look for him. Mm. So for some fun headcanon, my question is this. What rock wall or rock formation in any Star Wars movie was secretly Geode in disguise? I'm thinking he might have been the big rock Obi-Wan sits on after saving Luke from the Tusken Raiders in A New Hope. How rude of old Ben. Thanks as always for taking my questions. Thanks for sending them in, Simon. For anybody who is not caught up on the High Republic, you can probably figure it out from this question. Geode's a big sentient rock. And that's all you need to know to enjoy this question. Ken, which rocks in Star Wars do you think are secretly Geode?
Yeah, well, it's so funny because that's probably more accurate to what Geode is described, a rock for Obi-Wan to sit on. Because I initially had a thought of he's kind of like a rock wall. And he just kind of is there watching Jan Dodonna and Leia on Yavin 4 during the Death Star battle. but I'm going to go a little bit more with Simon's. And I think... you don't really get a clear shot, but the landscape has it's sandy, but also rocky. And I'm going to Pisana and the Aki Aki Festival of the Ancestors. And I think he was getting down.
Just dancing, yeah.
Celebrating, smiling. People and everyone in that community was like, Geode, you're back. And he's like, yeah, I was there 42 years ago. I wouldn't miss this one. But he really doesn't say it. He just kind of like, yeah.
He loves colorful kites and delectable sweets. Yeah, of course he'd be there. Why not? Mm-hmm. the two rocks came to mind. One is very close to Simon's. It is, there was that extra rock added in front of R2 in one of Lucas's changes to A New Hope, one of the most special editions. And it was one that at the time, I remember, really annoyed many, many fans that I talked to, older, grumpy fans.
Sure.
Oh, that's the change that makes A New Hope perfect now, is that there's extra rock that R2's hiding behind. And since it was added, that would be great. Like, yeah, no, it's Geode. He slid in there.
I actually, I'm going to tell you something. I accept that as headcanon now. That's great because there's an extra rock, but R2 was just kind of sitting out there in the open. So it does make sense to me. But I was like, how does he get in and out? Well, now that Geode moves, Geode's like, I got you, man.
Geode has his back. Yeah. Yeah. The only other one that jumped to my mind is I would love it if Geode was there on Tython, just really enjoying watching Boba Fett kick the bleep out of the stormtroopers.
He's just there. Oh, you're on fire today, Joseph. Those are two great jokes. That's hilarious.
That is a great question. Some great rocks. I'm gonna waste a lot of time today. Speaking of, trying to balance everything, I'm gonna end up just staring at the wall, thinking about what other rocks could Geode be.
Yeah, now I want to go over to Rocky Peak off the 118 freeway, Tython, and I want to go take a picture and be like, celebrity sighting, found Geode.
You should absolutely do. If you can, you set up a little step and repeat behind you and give Geode a big hug.
Perfect.
Excellent. Those are our questions. Lots of great ones from Jay from Nowhere, Alejo, John Z, and Simon Huffnagel. Thank you so much.
Thank you all. And if you want to find us or communicate with us out in the real world, you can do so on Twitter at Force Center Pod. You're can also find our Facebook page, Force Center Podcast. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. I got a little busy last week, so I didn't simulcast or rebroadcast an episode on YouTube channel. I apologize, people. I'll get some, probably put some bad batches on YouTube there. Podcasts available several spots, including Anchor, iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, and Amazon Music as well. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter, and patreon.com/ForceCenter is where you can support us directly. We also can be found on our own things there at Cadnapsock, or my website is cadnapsock.com. And we always like to highlight charities of choice or things that we're interested in. I am going to start focusing on one here over the GPA, which is where I do a lot of fun work over there with Josh and Mark Riley. We're going to be working with Battle Buddies, which is a great charity for dogs, for veterans come on back to regular life, quote unquote, and those kind of things, and doing great work. So you can hear more from me on that one there, but check it out right now if you want. Battle Buddies.
Excellent. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram, and now TikTok as at Joseph Scrimshaw. This morning, I just posted a new TikTok about Rats Tyrell. We'll see how popular that one is. So you can follow me there. You can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for all my other comedy adventures, comedy albums, my other podcast, Obsessed, all that kind of stuff. And I want to continue to highlight a great service called Vote Forward. It is a site where it helps organize so you can write personalized letters encouraging people to use their power to vote. They have campaigns popping up all the time for special elections, local elections, as well as gearing up eventually to the big midterm election. So if that's something that you might be interested in, you can check out their website at votefwd.org.
Check it out. And TBBF.org is the Battle Buddy Foundation. I was scrambling to try to find the website. There we go. So support those two things if you want, or just seek places out there in the galaxy to plug into and do what the Jedi do and help others in need there. So that is it for this week. Thanks for your questions. So for Geode, who's out there having fun somewhere, we'll see you all next time here on Force Center.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional, unprofessional. So if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.